Chapter 17. Waiting for the Whites. Drizzt had to summon Andahar and ride the unicorn hard to keep up with the running of Afrenfir. With his magical anklets, he had been able to pace the monk on foot for a short distance, but he had tired, and Brother Afrenfir showed no signs of wearying. They covered many miles that night, leaving the campfire lights of the vast orc encampment north of Mithril Hall, and the frost hills that housed the dwarven complex far behind. Nearly a third of the way to Dark Arrow Keep, they found the large dwarven force of thousands marching under the command of King Harnoth and his generals, and with Sinifane's elves patrolling all around. Still outside that perimeter, Afrenfir stopped and crouched. Drizzt dismounted to move beside him. "Dismiss your mount," the monk bade him. "You'll need the unicorn no longer." "Perhaps I will ride south for King Harnoth." "The scouts are in place all around us," Afrenfir explained. "The elves of the Moonwood know we are here." Drizzt nodded, but still hesitated as he tried to figure out where best he would fit in with this group. Was he going to join the fight at Harnoth's side, or ride back to stand beside Brunner and Catti Bree? Would he be better served astride Andahar in either scenario, riding the length of the dwarven battle line, Tall Maril in hand? That was for another day, he realized, and he bade Andahar to be gone. "Jarlaxle has determined that you will be with me when the fighting starts," Afrenfir told him, as if reading his mind. Drizzt eyed the monk curiously. "With me and the sisters," the monk explained. "I worked with Tasmakella in the journey to Citadel Felbar," Drizzt replied. "She walked as an elf through tight tunnels. Now that we were upon the surface once more, I had thought that she and her sister would likely take wing."
"They will."
Drizzt's expression grew more intrigued and more tentative all at once.
"We have saddles,"
Afrenfir explained.
"Oh, but that's a dizzying thing," Athrogate sputtered when he walked through Camoriel's time-space distortion beside Jarlaxle.
He stopped and blinked, confused for a moment to see that it wasn't Jarlaxle standing beside him, but Beniago.
"Put these on," the drow said to him, handing him some shackles.
"Eh?"
"For any orc or ogre sentries we might encounter until we get to Tiago."
"I thought meself was wearing the mask,"
said Athrogate, catching on that it was indeed Jarlaxle beside him, though with the magic of Jarlaxle's wondrous mask, the drow looked exactly like Beniago.
"I'll not reveal myself to Tiago," Jarlaxle replied. "Nay, not to that favored child of House Beanry. This is Bregan de Earth coming to inform him, not Jarlaxle."
"And if he catches on, who's first to die, yourself or meself?"
"Tiago," Jarlaxle assured him, and he started away. In front of them, a vast army crawled, lumbering across the miles, heading south from the ruins of Sundabar to the Moon Pass through the Nether Mountains. Warlord Hartusk was reaching farther, just as Jarlaxle had hoped. Before long, orc sentries had surrounded the pair, along with a particularly nasty-looking ogre.
"A prisoner!"
More than one cried with glee when they spotted Athrogate. The ogre even moved toward the shackled dwarf.
"Back away, the dwarf is not your concern," Jarlaxle ordered them. "I warn you only once."
He met the dwarf's gaze and silently begged for patience. If the ogre reached for Athrogate, the dwarf would shed the phony shackles and put his glass-steel morning stars, Whacker and Cracker, against either side of its misshapen head.
"Bring me to Tiago immediately," Jarlaxle ordered. "I have dire news."
The orcs seemed to hardly hear him, the ogre not at all, so entranced were they by the presence of a hated dwarf. The ogre leaned in closer and reached. A gob of green goo slammed the brute in the face, sending it reeling backward into a tree. There, the viscous material grabbed at the tree as well, pinning the ogre, its head fully engulfed. It clawed at the goo desperately but futilely.
The orcs grew agitated, hopping around, brandishing weapons, and all looking at Jarlaxle and the wand that had somehow appeared in his hand. The drow casually pulled out a large feather, as if it had magically appeared behind his ear, and threw it to the ground. A moment later, that feather became a gigantic bird, thick-legged, thick-bodied, and with a beak as long as a tall man's forearm. It ran for the struggling ogre and drove its beak against the brute's trapped head, stunning it. Up came a three-clawed foot, disemboweling the helpless ogre with one devastating slash. And the bird pecked and bit at the spilling entrails, the thrashing, dying ogre helpless to dissuade it from its gory feast. "I told you to take me to Tiago immediately," Jarlaxle said to the orcs. A short while later, Jarlaxle and Athrogate walked into a tent where Tiago, Sarabel, Ravel, and some other drow, undoubtedly also of Cusor Lauren, had settled after the day's hard march.
"Ben Iago?"
Tiago asked, clearly perplexed. "Take off those shackles," Jarlaxle instructed Athrogate, and the dwarf shook himself free of the bonds. "Do you know my associate, Athrogate?" he asked the others. "A fine spy for breaking the earth these last decades."
"What is the meaning of this?"
Sarabel demanded, as usual, impressing Jarlaxle with her quick wit and lightning mental reflexes. "You march for Everlund?" Jarlaxle, still disguised as Ben Iago, asked.
"What are you doing here?"
Tiago demanded. He glanced around. Jarlaxle noted that all of the drow were on edge.
"Are you here by order of Menzo Berenzon?" Sarabel demanded.
"I am here with news," Jarlaxle calmly replied. "You can listen or not, as you choose." "High Priestess, pray enact a divination spell," Jarlaxle said to Sarabel. "But you will know the veracity of my claim." When Sarabel was done casting her enchantment, Jarlaxle began. "This is Athrogate, a longtime associate of Bregan de Earth, and one, as you can see, particularly suited to spying on the enemies of Hartusk in this particular conflict. He went to Nesme at my bidding, and to Mithril Hall from there with my blessing." He noted that Tiago seemed to perk up quite a bit at the mention of Mithril Hall.
"You did this on orders from Menzo Berenzon?" Tiago asked. "From Matron Mother Quenthel?" Sarabel added, and it wasn't hard to notice her glare at her husband as she named the matron mother specifically.
"Bregan de Earth is free to use its own discretion here on the world above," Jarlaxle reminded them. "I thought it prudent to learn of the dwarves, and so I sent Athrogate."
"And now you are here," said Tiago. "Why?"
Jarlaxle turned to his dwarf associate and held forth his hand, bidding Athrogate to explain.
"They're coming out,"
the dwarf told them, as he had been instructed.
"Morning after tomorrow. King Conorad and his boys are bursting from Mithril Hall, don't ye doubt, through the east door to take the bridge over the Cerberan."
The day after tomorrow,
Tiago stammered.
"You know this?"
"He just told you," Jarlaxle intervened. He didn't want Athrogate to say any more. The dwarf's words had been carefully orchestrated, and Jarlaxle's own improvisations carefully added, for Sarabel's spell would surely show no lies in anything they had said, but saying more risked losing all.
"You are certain?"
Tiago asked Jarlaxle.
"I am always certain, cousin,"
said the double agent, who, like Ben Iago, really was the distant cousin of Tiago Beenry. "That is why I am alive." Tiago rubbed his face and paced around excitedly.
"I knew we were premature in our march to Everlund." "Because the dwarves would come forth,"
Sarabel was quick to scold.
"They are inconsequential, and why should we care? Let them battle many arrows to the death of both. It matters not."
Tiago fixed her with a hard stare, Jarlaxle noticed.
"You keep playing as if we can win, or as if there is anything to win," Sarabel continued. "This has been made clear to you, husband."
Jarlaxle thought it perfectly delicious that hot-humored Tiago did not draw his sword.
He chewed his lip, but he didn't even lash out verbally against Sarabelle's or Lauren. Because she was Sarabelle Doerden now, but more importantly, she was also High Priestess Sarabelle Bayenry.
"There is something to be won here," Tiago said, his tone decidedly more threatening suddenly. He was talking about Drizzt, Jarlaxle knew, and apparently Tiago's bloodlust for that one exceeded any good judgment he might have had regarding Sarabelle, and likely regarding anything at all.
"Come with me," Tiago ordered Jarlaxle, and he started for the tent flap.
"With you?" Jarlaxle replied.
"To Warlord Hartusk. He must be informed of this development."
Again he started for the tent flap, but stopped once more when Jarlaxle laughed.
"This is your fight, Tiago, and for all the seasons I've grown and learned, I cannot begin to figure out why you want it," Jarlaxle said. "You have been chasing this rogue for 2 decades, and to what good end?"
"The end is in sight, at the Serbran Bridge on the day after tomorrow."
"Whose end?" Jarlaxle quipped.
Tiago stared at him threateningly, and for a moment, Jarlaxle thought the impetuous young fool might move against him.
"I advise you as others have warned you," Jarlaxle calmly explained. "You have made great gains here in the Silver Marches, for your matron mother Zerith's fledgling city, and for your own fledgling house in Menzo Baranzon. Matron mother Quenthal is pleased by her expedition here, with such minimal loss, and with her fist tightening over all who might dare oppose her. You risk much in going after this rogue."
"Matron Mother Quenthal herself granted us these 150 days, Beniago of Brakendieerth," Sarabelle intervened, surprisingly. "She did not tell us how we must use them. What would make a houseless male think that his words would carry more weight than the blessings of the Matron Mother?"
Jarlaxle considered that for a few moments. He had tried to dissuade Tiago from going after Drizzt, even though he was glad that Tiago was likely going after Drizzt. For now, after all, Jarlaxle could honestly pass any interrogation the Matron Mother might put his way in the days to come.
"As you will, Priestess," he said with a bow. "And as you will, Cousin Tiago." And he bowed again.
"I had information I thought pertinent, and so I have done my duty and delivered it to you, and now I, and my spy here, will leave you to your choices."
He bowed once more, and Athrogate laughed as they felt time and space bending once more. Kimuriel, watching the proceedings through Athrogate's thoughts, had recalled them far, far away. Kimuriel was shaking his head when Jarlaxle and Athrogate walked through that warp to return to his side.
"Exactly as I told you it would transpire," Jarlaxle said to the psionicist's doubting expression.
"So you believe," said Kimuriel. "Do you doubt that Tiago will go after Drizzt, and surely astride a Rotheter? You heard Sarabelle. Even she is too eager for the prestige the head of Drizzt might bring to warn Tiago away."
"And if Hartusk pivots his force at this news?" Kimuriel asked.
"They cannot get to the Serbran Bridge in time."
"That will be a fine comfort to the dwarves when they are faced with 100,000 orcs.
Jarlaxle's expression soured.
"I liked you better when you didn't understand sarcasm," he remarked.
"I always understood it. It just took me some time to recognize that it might be necessary when communicating with inferior minds."
Athrogate began to laugh, but stopped with a puzzled expression, then scratched his head.
"Hartusk will not turn," said Jarlaxle.
He removed his magical mask and became Jarlaxle in appearance once more.
"Everlund is the bigger prize and the bigger threat. Now that winter is over, the city will find allies soon enough, and so will become forevermore lost to Hartusk. He is a fool, prideful and war-hungry enough to believe that he can sack the city, then move back on the dwarves. And in truth, there are more orcs and other monstrous allies remaining behind Hartusk in the upper Serbran Vale than all the dwarves of all the citadels combined.
but Tiago will turn from Everlund.
Tiago has a dragon, Jarlaxle answered. He believes that he will be at both fights, of course.
And you think him wrong?
Jarlaxle shrugged and considered the dragon sisters. Ancient and huge, Orathator was no minor worm after all. And though his son was nowhere near that venerable state, Orbengross too was quite powerful. Tasmakella and Ilnazara were formidable indeed, but in a fair fight, Jarlaxle would be hard-pressed to wager on them against the whites, or even against the old white death alone. Jarlaxle never fought fair.
Is there an endgame in your plans? Kimuriel asked.
A simple question on the surface, but one that nagged at Jarlaxle.
Of course, he said with a smile, his red eyes twinkling, though only one was visible now, as he adjusted the eye patch that kept Kimuriel out of his thoughts.
The eye patch that kept Kimuriel from recognizing Jarlaxle's confidence as a complete lie.
He bade me to wish you well, and to tell you both to be safe, Afafrenfir said to Brunner and Catibri in private,
after the monk had spoken with Brunner, King Emerus, and Dorethio Spikes to lay out the final disposition of the coming battle. The monk had arrived in the late afternoon of the day before the dwarves would spring their attack on the orc encampment around the Cerberan Bridge. Brunner and Catibri, of course, had been quite concerned to find Afafrenfir coming in alone without Drizzt by his side.
"Was thinking the elf would be here fighting aside me," Brunner replied.
"Drizzt has a larger role to play," the monk replied.
"Eh?"
"What do you know?" Catibri demanded, and the monk grinned. "Brother, I find no humor in your cryptic references," Catibri sternly scolded him. "Drizzt is my husband. I am returned to this world for him and no other."
"Aye, and same's for me," said Brunner,
and he ended with a harumph that became a confused frown.
"Excepting, of course, that he ain't me husband," he clarified.
"He would be here if he did not understand the importance of his role," said the monk.
"And pray tell, what is that role?"
Afafrenfir looked up, drawing their eyes to the darkened sky.
"You will see him when the battle begins in full," he explained, and gestured skyward.
"Eh?"
Brunner asked again.
"That is all I can say," the monk replied with a bow. "Look to the sky when the worms scream. You will understand."
"The worms?"
the dwarf and Catibri said together, but Afafrenfir merely bowed and started away, and at such a speed that he was far out of their range before either of the two could figure out what to ask him next. The monk didn't slow as he left the secret dwarven encampment far behind. He rolled across the miles with ease, tirelessly, until he knew that he was again in the region where King Harnoth and the elves had quietly camped. Off to the east, down by the Cerberan, he found Drizzt and the sisters still in the form of elves.
"Jarlaxle has not returned?" he asked.
"We know our role in the battle," Ilnazara answered.
"And our role?" Afafrenfir asked, indicating Drizzt as well.
"Hold on," Tasmakella quipped sarcastically. "This is beyond you and beyond Jarlaxle," Ilnazara said. "He has made his play with the Drow Tiago at our insistence. Now he will fade from the battlefield as we do what we must."
"What are you talking about?"
Drizzt asked the sisters, but he was looking too at Afafrenfir as he spoke.
"Our enemy's dragons will likely join the battle," Afafrenfir explained.
"We are hoping as much," Ilnazara said.
Drizzt rocked back on his heels and digested that. Evidently, the plan was for him to be riding a dragon when that dragon went into battle with another dragon.
"Catibri," he whispered at length. "We should have brought her."
He started to explain, but lost his voice as the two elves in front of him stripped off their garments and suddenly transformed, becoming a pair of graceful and lethal copper dragons.
Afafrenfir was already approaching with his saddle, Drizzt noted, the other saddle sitting hooked to a tree branch behind him.
"The battle is still hours away," the drow protested.
"We will go to get a better vantage," Afafrenfir explained.
"He is a stubborn fool," Tiago fumed.
"Did you expect anything different?" Sarabel answered. They had gone to Warlord Hartusk to inform him of the possible breakout from Mithril Hall, and to ask him to turn around to crush the dwarves. Warlord Hartusk hadn't seemed impressed by the suggestion.
"Everlund is before him, the jewel of his conquests," Sarabel reminded. "Our front ranks are but a few days from the city."
"And our rear guard but a hard day's ride from the Cerbrin Bridge," Tiago shot back. He paused for a few moments, playing it out in his thoughts. "Get your brother," he ordered. Sarabel looked at him as if he had slapped her.
"I beg of you," Tiago pleaded. "Gather Ravel and the others." "All of this for Drizzt O'Erden. You intend to take the white dragons from Warlord Hartusk in this, his moment of glory?"
"We will be back to his side, the dwarves crushed, long before he comes in sight of Everlund."
"The dwarves crushed, and Drizzt's head in your bag, you mean?"
"Yes."
"Husband," Sarabel said with a resigned sigh.
"Your brother," Tiago insisted again. "Gather as many of the soldiers of Cusor Laren as you can, and through the spells of Ravel and his fellows, return to the north, I beg. Steal as many orcs as you can, and with your spells and warg mounts, travel fast for the Cerbrin Bridge. Let us be done with this, my wife, for the glory of House Do'Urden and the gain of Cusor Laren."
"For the glory and gain of Tiago, you mean?"
"It is all one and the same, is it not? Matron Mother Quentha left us here without Menzo Berenzon's forces. Are we expected to be no more than handmaidens to an orc warlord?"
It was a strong point, Tiago thought, when he noted Sarabel's slight and likely inadvertent nod.
"Or are we to behave as drow?" Tiago pressed. "As servants of Lady Lolth. Intelligence and initiative win the day, my wife, and win the trophy."
"I am quite certain that if you bring pain to Gromp's white dragon friends, he will turn you into a skitter newt," she warned him.
But that was the last of her protests, and she sent her handmaidens scrambling to find Ravel. A short while later, his saddle secured and he secured to it, Drizzt held his breath as Tasmakella leaped into the dark sky. She flew back to the east, Ilnazara in front of her, gaining height and speed. The wind stole the tears from Drizzt's eyes and sent his white hair and forest-green cloak flying out behind him. He held on tightly, amazed all over again by the acceleration and the steep climb. The air grew colder as the ground diminished below them. Higher they went, the darkened sky looming above them. Drizzt held his breath as Tasmakella entered the roiling blackness, and for a moment the drow was fully blinded, as if a darker night had fallen upon him. And then he saw the stars as Tasmakella came through the other side of the drow enchantment. The stars! The mere sight of them relaxed Drizzt. It was notably colder up here, and his teeth chattered a bit, but it wasn't too uncomfortable, not even enough to draw his attention from the starlit sky. The notion came to him that he owed it to the Silver Marches, to the dwarves who had trusted him and taken him in, to the folk of Silvery Moon, which had been as his second home for decades, and indeed to all the folk of the region, to rid them of this atrocity. This spell, this abomination, stole the sunlight and the starlight. With the blessings of Lolth, the Dark Elves had brought a bit of the Underdark to the surface world. It could not stand. He would not let it stand. Drizzt understood that, though he had no idea what he might possibly do against the spell of blackness that had come to the north. And yet, he would somehow remove it. And now there was only serenity, only a peaceful and calm glide on the high winds. His dragon mount was silent as she effortlessly soared through the night, and that silence reminded Drizzt of the whispers that dragon flight was as much magic as the mechanics of a giant bird. Surely Tasmakella's soundless glide seemed magical to him, as did the flight of Ilnazara beside him. He looked to Afafrenfir and noted the monk's expression, and understood that Afafrenfir was as entranced as he by the spectacle of dragon flight, or perhaps by the simple beauty of the normal night. It didn't matter. It was quiet and calm, and ultimately serene. Drizzt recalled his many nights on Brunner's Climb in Icewind Dale, when the stars seemed to reach down all around him to lift him up into their eternal bosom. He felt that way again, like he was part of the night sky, part of the vast heavens, part of something immeasurably larger than himself. And so he sat back and relaxed and simply enjoyed the sensation. He was disappointed when Tasmakella dived back down through the darkening, then set down on a high plateau a short while later on a mountain just north of Mithril Hall, and with both of the northern orc encampments in sight. The smaller one near Mithril Hall's north door was to Drizzt's right, while the much larger one to his left filled the upper Cerberan Vale. "Here we wait," Tasmakella explained, returning to her elf form after Drizzt dismounted. "My sister and the monk will set their watch over there," she added, pointing to the east, to another peak nearer the Cerberan. "When Arothiter and his son arrive, we will know."
"And then?"
"And then, Drizzt O'Erden, you will come to understand that you are a little thing after all." She moved closer then, and reached up to gently stroke Drizzt's hair, eyeing him with a suggestive smile. He recoiled, and Tasmakella stepped back, her face a mask of confusion.
"My wife would not approve."
"But would you?" she asked, her voice the purr of a predatory cat. "If not for her, Drizzt O'Erden?" Drizzt swallowed hard. It was hard to deny the dragon's beauty in this form. He reminded himself that it was an illusion, that she was a dragon. Finally, he took a deep breath and shook his head. "I am not," he stuttered, trying to find the words, and not really happy about the prospect of rejecting a dragon.
"I mean, this is not the way that I..."
Tasmakella's laughter stopped him. "Jarlaxle told me as much about you," she said, and Drizzt couldn't tell if she was complimenting him or mocking him. "Such a pity," the dragon said. And she moved to the lip of the plateau and sat down, bare on the stone, staring out to the orc camps and beyond. Drizzt moved beside her, not too close, and sat down, and Tasmakella nodded her approval. "You will enjoy tomorrow," she promised. And that was the last thing either said that night, as they sat there under the abomination of the darkening, waiting for the whites.